You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Here's Miller and Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome in, Miller and Condon, on a Monday, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM, as we talk football with you for the next couple of hours. Maybe sprinkle in a baseball note or two, as there was a no-no in baseball yesterday, as the Cubs, who had a resounding ninth inning on Saturday night, carried that over until Sunday when Alec Mills took the bump and didn't give up a hit as the Cubs prevailed. But football front and center here this morning on the BMW of Des Moines guest list. We'll start things off with Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Look forward to speaking with Doc. He was in the press box at Jack Trice Stadium. We'll talk a little bit about that with Doc, but more so on the Big Ten. Conflicting information this morning after a very optimistic weekend. Dan Patrick, of all people, has thrown some cold water on this. I'm quoting from his show's Twitter feed. Presidents and chancellors will vote today. Michigan probably not going to play. Michigan State not going to play. Maryland probably won't play. If you're looking, you're going to get Nebraska, Iowa, Purdue, Indiana, Ohio State, and Wisconsin, who may not be able to play. I don't think, Trent, we will get a piecemeal Big Ten. I think it's going to be all or nothing. Most of the media still believes that it is all. Most of the people that follow the Big Ten, Dan Patrick obviously has somebody, as he would think. Mm-hmm. I like to think he has very good sources. But he is saying that the optimism that I think permeated throughout the Big Ten footprint over the weekend, tap the brakes a little bit, according to DP. We will see.
Yes, we will. A little shade being thrown his way. And this is something we talked about, I think, last week or maybe a couple of weeks ago. The difference between being a embedded beat reporter, a breaking news type of media member, and somebody that opines and maybe has a contact. Stuart Mandel from The Athletic.
Rip Dan Patrick.
Stop taking Dan Patrick's reports about the Big Ten seriously. The first two weren't remotely accurate. Keep following credible reporters like Bruce Feldman and Nicole Auerbach, and you'll know where things stand. Shade there.
You don't see that very often.
No, you do
media
not.
Media on media crime.
Yeah.
Especially two at the top. Locally, you'll see it, but not certainly two guys that have reached the pinnacle, I would think. Mm-hmm. The Athletic is certainly not going away, and Dan Patrick's Dan Patrick, after all. So, yeah, that's a great point, Trent. You don't see that often. Patrick came out with what he heard. Stuart Mandel shot down the rumor. We shall see who's proven right, as I believe we're going to find out either way in the next couple of days. But I don't think you're going to get half the schools playing and half the schools not playing. Mm-hmm. I don't think that makes sense to anybody. Big weekend of the NFL. We're going to get into your Bears. Mitchell Trubisky leading the Bears to a comeback victory over the hapless. Gotta be. It would suck to be a Lions fan.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't. The only thing worse would being a Cyclone and a Lions fan.
And there are, I'm sure, a few of them out there.
I'm sure that there are, Trent.
We get our call from our Lions buddy every year in Ankeny.
Is he a Cyclone fan?
I don't know if he is, but a big percentage of the people up in Ankeny are. Connect the dots there. That is a 1-2 punch.
It's unbelievable.
Until a few years ago, you also maybe throw a Cubs fan in the mix.
Right, but they obviously crossed
that one off. Yeah.
No doubt about it. Trent, I don't know when we're going to stop buying into this Iowa State hype. It's every single offseason. It's going to be the best team ever.
Mm-hmm.
Even better than 2019. Even better than 2018. 2000, year after year after year, we're told that the best team in Iowa State history is about to take the field. Look, Matt Campbell, and they wanted to build a statue of this guy. I go back and remind you. At this point, they also wanted to have a statue of Paul Rhodes, and we know how that ended. Matt Campbell's 26-26. Paul Rhodes at the same point was 25-27. Matt Campbell's won the Liberty Bowl, got beat in the Alamo Bowl, brought a lot of fans, good game, got throttled, embarrassed in the Camping World Bowl. His quarterback, Is he taking the step forward, or is he going backwards in his career? He did not look good. Offensive line, I get it. You had a big loss at left guard. Left tackle's got cement on shoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, blocks, for God's sake. He can't move to save his life. The receivers don't get any separation. I like the defense a lot, with the exception of Miller, who had a horrible day. Davon Kyle is a pro.
Yeah, he did.
He is He's a really complete good. Pro. He was just blanketing guys all over the field. Greg Eisworth, fantastic.
Rose makes plays.
Although he didn't play, I thought he missed a couple of tackles.
You're right, yeah.
I thought, yeah, normally, Trent, I'm with you. I thought Mike Rose, you know, it's week one, didn't have his best game. Defensive line is stout. Mm-hmm. Defensive line is stout. Kohler being out, huge loss. Huge loss.
Not a 17-point loss, though.
No, Trent, no. No, I'm not making excuses. There's no excuse. This was awful. And they better beat TCU, who does not play until they play Iowa State, because if they don't, with Oklahoma coming to town, you're staring down the barrel of an 0-3 start. You made a kind of a joke before this. We don't do polls because we'd only get like four people responding. We hate embarrassing ourselves. But your poll question, who's going to win a game first, Iowa or Iowa State?
It's not a huge stretch in jest. The TCU game is a coin flip game. It's on the road.
They play Texas Tech, who's awful.
Yeah, they struggled to get by Houston Baptist, a Houston Baptist team that got beat by 26 by North Texas.
Oh, Trent, that's unbelievable. Look, the bottom of the Big 12, we usually say this in basketball.
Yeah.
Kansas, K-State, Iowa State,
Texas Tech.
Whew. The Sun Belt came into Big Ten cities and laid a whooping.
3-0.
3-0.
For the belt over the Big 12.
But it was, look, I think Hutchinson's a nice player, receiver-wise.
Well, they targeted him a ton.
A ton, Trent, a ton.
Probably too much reliance on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I bought into, he turned down Oklahoma. Yeah, he's not playing if he's at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Right? He's standing on the sidelines at Oklahoma. He was okay. Sean Shaw, they have all dropped passes. Mm-hmm. Kohler being out is a blow. Breece Hall is a terrific running back. I'd have liked to seen Jirell Brock, who was on the sidelines with his number 21 jersey. He wasn't dressed. I don't know if, obviously, there's an injury there, you would think. But Brock Purdy's the question mark to me, Trent. And I can't tell you how many mock drafts I've seen that this guy's a first-round pick. Trent, what am I missing?
Well, in every time that we brought that up throughout this summer, spring and summer, and we'd see these mock drafts that would come out, and I continually went to, guy doesn't have the arm strength. He does not have the arm strength to be an NFL quarterback. Certainly not a first two, three-round draft pick.
No way. He's a third-day pick at best.
Yeah, and it's because of the athleticism, and he can run around a little bit, but arm strength, that's not even close. There are throws that he cannot make, and you saw it again at the game on Saturday. He just, not only that, but the mechanics, and how lazy he can get with his mechanics and throwing off the back foot.
There was no emotion on that side. I got to tell you, as much as critical as we've been the last 3 minutes, I might be saving the worst for last.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Campbell quit.
That's
Matt
an embarrassment.
Matt Campbell quit on his football team.
You're down 10.
With 7.5 minutes, roughly 7 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
The Raging Cajuns have the ball on their side of the 50, right? You've got two timeouts left. 10 points, okay, we've seen that. It's going to be difficult. You're at some point going to ask an Iowa State kicker to make a big field goal. We know that's a 50-50 proposition normally. But Matt Campbell standing on the sidelines, and good for Billy Napier.
Yes.
Who decided, you know what? I'm not calling off our guys. We're going to score again. And they did.
We'll take a 3-score lead.
Absolutely did, Trent. I don't know how you should. Now, I know the fan base will. I mean, I've seen, speaking of local media, this is still a very good football team.
No, it's not.
I'm very optimistic about this team going forward.
This is a terrible offensive line.
What did you see that would lead you to being optimistic? Yes, teams improve between week one and two. So will everybody. This isn't just an Iowa State thing.
Are they getting a bunch of transfers to play offensive line? Are they going to go out and all of a sudden find a bunch of new receivers to go in there? Is this team going to markedly change? No. Offensive line, you can't hide it.
No.
And it doesn't matter how good the skill positions are. Your offensive line is bad. Your offense is going to be bad. This is year number 5 of noted guru, we've been told.
Yeah.
And it's not only Matt Campbell with an offensive line background.
Tom Manning,
the offensive coordinator, also has a offensive line background. Well, Yeah, they lost a lot of starters last year, but you just wait. This group coming in, it's more talented. Mm. How many times do we hear that garbage? This group is more talented than what they had before.
Trent, the answer's every year. We get told it's the best team in Iowa State history every year. Some of us buy it.
And you lose by 17 to a Sun Belt team.
And your coach quit. Coach quit.
2:29 left. First and 10 at the 11. You hold them to a field goal, you get the ball back down 13.
Yeah, that's asking a lot, but still give your kids
give a chance. Don't quit. You don't call it. You tackle them for a loss. It's 2nd and 11. You don't use a timeout. Okay, you got two, so maybe you're just holding off. They make a good run. They do make a run on that next play, but it's still 3rd and short, and you don't use a timeout there.
Yeah, I don't get it. This is still a very good football team.
Come on,
please, Trent. Let's move on. There's nothing more you can say.
No,
they better beat TCU. Because Oklahoma's next. And did you see Spencer Rattler? I don't care who the competition was.
It's not a very good Missouri State
team. No, but you know what? When those receivers were running behind them, they didn't have to break stride. They hit the ball. The ball was placed right where it needed to be time after time after time. This kid's making his first start. That was...
they put 31 up in the first quarter.
Right. It's about all you need to know. Oh, that was brutal, brutal, brutal in Ames. Brutal in Ames. NFL from yesterday. I want to spend a couple of minutes there. I want to specifically... on the NFC North as they all played each other. Let's start with your Bears. Lance Briggs, after the game, according to Cappy, David Kaplan, joins us every Wednesday, Centurion Stone sponsors, mentioned that for whatever reason, Matt Patricia decided to go away from the zone defense and play man-to-man. And apparently, this is Mitchell Trubisky's strength is going up against man defenses. I would like to think Matt Patricia is a little bit brighter to know that maybe that's not the right idea. But whatever the case was, Trent, he looked like a quarterback. You had to feel, after ripping Mitchell Trubisky for three quarters on Twitter,
got awful quiet.
It was easy to do, those first three quarters.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't, yeah.
He was bad.
He missed open guys, as has been his calling card.
Another guy lazy with the mechanics and throwing off the back foot. They talked about that at halftime of the game. Bradshaw was mentioning that. Just throwing off the back foot, even when rushes weren't there, you got to step up. You got to fire the ball. You know, there was that third down pass that was behind the receiver in the first half. It's just a bad throw. Yeah. You're an NFL quarterback.
You have to make it.
That's a pitch and catch. But to what Lance Briggs was saying, and going to the man, I think it's very simple. Against the zone, you got to read. You got to read what's out there. You have to go through your progressions. When it's man, it's pretty simple. This guy's making his break, and he's going to have the hip. He's going to have the step, and I'm going to fire it there. I think it's just simplicity for Mitch. He's a talented guy in terms of arm athletic ability. He has that.
You want to see it again, don't you?
The mental makeup, though, still questionable. He is a very shaky guy. And I do wonder, if you got Matt Nagy on a quiet moment where he would tell you the truth, how close was he to just pulling the trigger and going to Foles?
Early in the to start the second half?
Anytime in the third quarter into the early fourth before the comeback started. That at least has to cross your mind. Now, if you do that, it's over for Trubisky. You can never, short of injury, go back to him.
Short of injury, right.
It's over. You're completely crossing it out. Plus, you're down 17. I saw Warren Sharp, Sharp Football, on Twitter. 99.6% of
that
the time
the probability?
Is with a
team, with a 17-point
lead. With a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter, do teams in the NFL win? 99.6% of the time, I think, over the last 20 years is the number. The Bears, though, found a way. Four times, now five times, a team has come back over the last 20 years from a 17-point fourth-quarter deficit. Because he put in Foles there, I think we know what's going to happen. They'll lose. Maybe they'll put a touchdown up, and there'll be some kind of whimper there. But Trubisky, making some of those throws, getting the one-on-one coverage on the outside and actually firing it, he looked like a completely different guy.
He did.
Am I buying it? No. Not at all. I am not buying this one.
Who do they have
week
two?
They got the Giants.
Oh, well, that should be a win. We'll see them tonight.
And they get them at Soldier Field. So you get a home game there.
Off a short week.
Yeah, off a short week. Good call, with the Giants playing tonight. And then after that for the Bears, it's Atlanta, who did not. Yeah. That defense looked atrocious. Russell Wilson.
Yeah, Russell Wilson's pretty good.
Four touchdown passes, three incompletions.
Yeah, he's pretty.
That's not a bad stat line.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Trent, he's the most accurate deep passer I've ever seen. Ever. Ever.
And the Bears get the Colts after that. We talking 4-0 Bears?
They could be, Trent. They could be. If Trubisky continues to take steps forward. The Washington football team.
Yes.
I didn't see that coming.
Heard a lot about that defense and the way that they're built. But the other piece was Dwayne Haskins. The report from the locker room at the half. a second-year quarterback, a guy still has to be looking over his shoulder at Alex Smith.
Yeah,
Alex Smith was not on the active roster for this game, but sounds like he's incredibly close. Mm-hmm. How many games does Haskins have? And to rally the troops in that way and to rely on that run game, that Gibson kid, he's good. They got something there. McLaurin we saw last year. He's a really nice receiver.
So you watched a lot of that game by yourself.
A lot more.
Did you bet it or something?
I was on the Washington professional football team, so that was a piece of it. But watched a lot, and I walked away. That defense didn't get off to a good start.
Yeah.
But from the middle of the second quarter on, that's certainly one of the top 10 defenses in the league, and maybe higher than that.
So if you're an Eagles fan, what are you thinking about Carson Wentz right now?
I don't know what you can.
Right?
Because you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop and get hurt first. Next, if you're the Eagles. Now, the good news is, what happened to the Cowboys?
Trent, that defense is putrid.
Are we looking at another 8-8, 9-7 will win the NFC East?
You know who was good was Aldon Smith was terrific in the football game. The linebacker, 55, from Boise State, going out, getting hurt.
Van.
It starts with an E.
Yeah.
He collarbone coming off a neck surgery for him. Of course, the tight end goes down. The offense was okay. The offense was fine in the football game. I thought the pass interference call or the offensive pass interference at the end was an egregious call. But if you're going to say that, they got away with one on Goff's pick because Goff's pick was, I mean, his face mask was ripped sideways.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of do even out. The offensive PI was, I thought it was an awful call, but Jalen Ramsey sold it and they bought it.
There's guys that we talk about that are just worth the price of admission. And Aaron Donald, a defensive tackle that it just.
Did you see him pick up Ezekiel Elliott? Yeah. And Ezekiel Elliott, apparently 235 pounds, and he picked him up off the ground and threw him.
Ragdoll.
Through the air. Yes.
It's like picking up a Cabbage Patch Kid and just chucking it to the side.
Unbelievable.
He is so much fun to watch. I can't think of a defensive tackle that I've enjoyed watching as much as him.
Yeah, and Ndamukong Suh when he was in college.
Yeah, he was dominant.
Right. Yeah, it's a fair point. A defensive tackle that I've enjoyed watching is probably a short list. I'd have to spend some time thinking about it.
Yeah, Syracuse, just because he was huge.
Yeah,
but he just plugged the middle. He wouldn't do anything.
Right. Not the most athletic dude.
But Aaron Donald, his ability as a pass rusher, of course, his ability stuffing the run, he is a different level. And that was my biggest walking away point. Just him in a game. The Rams... Told you I like the Rams coming in the year. I picked them to win the West, and I don't know. I don't know where that offense
you're wrong.
Is still
Seattle's
going to
win the West.
Two-team race?
Maybe.
Three-team
Arizona?
Race?
We'll see.
49ers losing at home. And watched a lot of that one because I was also on the Cardinals. I will tell you.
You must have had a good week in your picks.
I did, yeah. College was really good. I went 4-1 in our picks, and it was a very profitable weekend.
Good.
After a rough early week, we bounced back, and... There's more to bet on. One other thing, and I didn't even realize until, maybe halftime of the NFL games, what was the NBA doing putting the Nuggets game?
Who knows, right?
At
I couldn't
noon?
Agree with you more. I don't get it, Trent.
What's the justification?
I don't get it. And by the sounds of things, we missed a pretty good basketball game.
Another huge comeback.
Yeah, and now there's a game 7 on Tuesday night.
What, are they going to put that at 1 in the afternoon? What are they doing?
Don't get it. Don't understand.
Okay,
stay away from Sunday.
I get away. They don't want to go up against Sunday Night Football. Okay, I would argue with it, but I understand that.
Now, we got to keep the circumstances in mind. They want to get to next season sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I wouldn't say push the game to tonight because you're still going up against a double header of NFL, but even like the late afternoon window when there's only 3 NFL games and I don't know, started at 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock our time, something like that, leading into Sunday Night Football. That was just a head scratcher. I was disappointed when I was hearing people talking about the comeback because I still wasn't flipping away from
it. Yeah, I didn't see it. The only thing I flipped to was when John Heyman alerted everybody via Twitter that Alec Mills has a no-hitter in the ninth inning. I saw the final three.
Did you get there as the Cubs were still batting? That's when I got over.
No, I got there to see Alec Mills first pitch of the ninth inning.
So Arcia, the outfielder for the Brewers, was on the bump as they were going
deep.
Oh, they
were getting crushed. Yeah.
He was up there throwing the baseball in the 40s, 40 miles an hour.
Really?
I mean, he was just literally lobbing it up there. And it was Ian Happ walked, and then it was Rizzo that was up. But there was one pitch, and the radar gun was on it, 42, 46, 51, and he was just tossing it up there. There was one that, I mean, looped in there. The radar gun didn't even pick it up.
Wow.
It had to be 35 miles an hour. Mm. Didn't even pick it up, and then Rizzo crushes one on the ground, but it was to the second baseman for the final out. But as we talked about with the Kenta Maeda no-hitter here a few weeks back with the Twins, the Cubs did the same thing. After that half inning, instead of going to commercial break, they stayed with it and set it up. And I don't know if this is something that baseball has always done on television or done for a long time.
Not gone to break, you mean?
Yeah, I can't remember it until this year, but tip of the ball cap to the production crews, because that's great. Just setting the scene and getting that 90 seconds, 2 minutes leading into it. The anticipation was great.
No, it really was.
It takes a lot to get away from football on a Sunday, especially week one.
Yeah.
Alec Mills was able to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Tampa Bay's got a no-no going, I'm going to flip over and play football, but since it was the Cubs, one of the locals. Speaking of the locals, Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers was unbelievable. Gutekunst got ripped for taking Jordan Love the way he did. It's motivated number 12, and if that indeed is the case, that's a scary proposition if you're a Lions, Bears, or Vikings fan, because Aaron Rodgers was Aaron Rodgers. Drinking from the fountain of youth. Trent, he was unbelievable in that football game yesterday. Aaron Jones was terrific. Davante Adams was fantastic. Scantling Valdez can't catch to save his life.
No, he had,
Two of them.
Four or five drops, I think, in the game by the wide receiver.
He might have had more.
Yeah.
But he had two egregious ones. Lazard catches a touchdown pass. You know, speaking of that, we're going back to Iowa State. Their kicker missed two field goals. The grad transfer from, is it Indiana?
Indiana, yeah.
He missed two field goals, so they had two red zone trips where they didn't score a point. It's actually worse.
It was.
It could have been. Oh, brutal, brutal, brutal. Scott Dockerman coming up next. We got the latest on Doc. Is he buying his colleagues at the Athletics report, or is he buying Dan Patrick's report? Maybe it's me wishful thinking. I want to buy into the Athletics. I like their plan of everybody playing better.
Yes, yes. Let's go for that one.
Let's take that one. If there's a choice, we're with you until noon. Appreciate you choosing to spend some of your morning with Trent and I. We're Miller and Condon. Still to come, Todd Haslip. We never did the BMW Des Moines guest list, did we?
No, we got Tad Haslip coming on.
Tad Haslip
at 11:45.
At 10:45. He covers the NFL. Bama Bob, Trent and I will go around college football. ACC, I found, you know, what is... Now, I think next week is going to be difficult to glean some stuff.
There's a couple of Louisville-Miami, the big
should
game.
Should be good.
Outside
the
of
Notre
that,
Dame game was fun. Your Georgia Tech game was fun.
Yeah.
I'm still not sold on Ian Book. I am sold on that freshman running back, 23. My gosh.
He popped, didn't he?
Holy mackerel. So we'll go around college football for a few minutes with Bama, and then Dave Sproul from KASI. Matt Campbell's teleconference is 10 after 11. We'll get Dave Sproul as soon as he hangs up the phone from that. Dave Sproul from KASI in Ames. Miller and Condon till noon. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO1.
Ken Miller, Trent Condon, Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO.
And now on 106.3 FM.
Condon. Wish Wojnarowski covered the Big Ten.
You know the truthful information to follow?
And Stuart Mandel walked back his tweet from earlier. Thought it was a little too harsh.
No.
I thought it was great. I'm glad he did. Scott Dockerman momentarily. Todd Haslip from the Sporting News covers the NFL in about 15 minutes or thereabouts. Let's get Scott Dockerman in here. He was in Ames on Saturday morning. Jack Trice covering the Cyclones game. Doc, good to talk to you. Trent and Ken, where we want to start is, you know, a lot of football fans, certainly a good portion of this state, to want their black and gold on the field. Who doesn't? But in the Big Ten footprint, Big Ten football means so much. Doc, I was really optimistic until I saw Dan Patrick's tweet. Where are you this morning on the Big Ten resumption of football potentially?
Well, I think all indications to me are that they're going to play. It's just, you know, there are questions about opt-out for certain schools. I think that was part of the discussion yesterday. At least that's what I've kind of heard. And so there is the potential for certain schools to say, we're just not prepared for it. So then the Big Ten could kind of go without them and not be, you know, 14 strong or all or none. And so that's a really big factor. And that's something that was discussed in the very beginning. They got shot down. So I do think football will proceed. I think it will proceed in October. That's my guess, more than I'm not reporting that. But I think it's, you know, it could be pretty wonky and pretty odd, you know, looking from what we think it might be.
It's absolutely crazy, just the reports that continue to pile in and hearing the different ways that this is ultimately going to play out. So is it just as simple as the rapid testing that's available? This is enough to push the school chancellors and presidents back to allowing football to happen? Is it as simple as that?
I think there's two factors, the health-related factors that really pushed them to postpone it and push them to resume it, and that is, yes, the rapid testing is vital. I mean, the fact that you can test people daily, quickly, get results back quickly, and then figure out, okay, you know, this person tests positive, what's the contract tracing? You could do all of that, you know, in the span of a couple hours versus days. And the other thing is myocarditis. I think we haven't seen a real consensus, but some of the reports that were out there previously were erroneous from certain doctors. Mm-hmm. And there was a real concern at that time on August 11th that was a major byproduct of having COVID. And so I think the fact that doesn't seem to be the universal case, I think that's probably also a factor in maybe resuming football.
Doc, so if there is a resumption of football, the October 10th seems like it's too quick to me, especially Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin's at a point right now where they're shut down. Does the 17th make more sense to you? I mean, Trent and I and Tom Caker went through it on this past Friday. They could feasibly do it with no stoppages. If the start on the 24th of October, you can still play your eight games and get in the championship game to, in all likelihood, send Ohio State to the college football playoff. What date makes more sense to you? Is the 17th probably now the target?
I think the 17th is the target. You know, I'm wondering if it's going to be the 24th. It really comes down to if it's the 17th, you could have, you know, eight games over 9 weeks or nine games over 9 weeks and have the championship game on the 19th, although I don't know that you can have it in Indianapolis because the Colts are home and they're on a question mark, which means it could be either a Saturday or a Sunday game. You know, so that will, it could be Detroit. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, or even a home site, you know, and for that game. But that said, or it could be the 24th where it's eight straight games with no buys, with no opportunities to back up. I mean, there's a couple of different options here, and you know, and I think we're all presuming Ohio State, which does have a team, a roster capable of getting to the playoffs. But you know, Sean Wade leaving for the mm-hmm. NFL today, Wyatt Davis last week.
Yep.
You know, when we're talking football, we're not sleep on two teams in the West Division right now, and that's Wisconsin and Iowa, because I think both teams have a roster capable of competing with Ohio State.
You look at the Iowa Hawkeyes, and let's say we get the thumbs up here in the next couple of days from the Big Ten. They had been shut down for a little while. I think the football players are now back able to work out. The shortened ramp-up period, is that advantage Iowa, disadvantage Iowa? How would you look at them in compared to their conference brethren?
It really remains to be seen. I think, you know, there's been so much turmoil associated with the Iowa program, but I think that they built a really strong chemistry over the summer. And so I think, absent the fact that they don't have a returning quarterback, I do think that they have enough returning players and enough team chemistry that I think they could progress decently. You know, maybe their fundamentals won't be as sharp as what you'd expect, but I think there's enough cohesion there that they should be okay. But, you know, it's interesting because throughout the summer they were able to get workouts in. They had pauses due to high COVID numbers, and then they certainly did a couple weeks ago. But, you know, there's not going to be, you know, the big fear back in May was you needed 6 weeks at a minimum in order to play. Well, that was before they had the summer workouts. I mean, I think right now you're looking at if they got the okay this afternoon and they started on, say, Tuesday or Wednesday with camp, I mean, that's the equivalent of starting in early August, and then they did have some workouts. So I don't think it'd be quite as detrimental as maybe we thought it would be looking in May, where maybe there wasn't even going to be any kind of workouts until July.
Worst case scenario, Doc, say Dan Patrick's right, that there's only going to be, you know, a handful of teams that want to do this. What's the likelihood that, I mean, is January still, it's obviously it's option C, October, then November, Thanksgiving B, and then January C. Do you think that, you know, if we do get to January and there's been no Big Ten football up until that point, does that lessen the likelihood that we get anything at all? Because, boy, oh boy, it sure seems like January is an awful consolation prize.
It does from the playoff perspective, because the Big Ten sees itself as, you know, among the Power Five, where its champion should be considered strongly for the playoff. And if you're not in that conversation, then you feel like it's been of a letdown of a season no matter what. So that, to me, is the biggest problem with January, is that whether it's Ohio State or Penn State or Iowa or Wisconsin, that you don't get that opportunity to compete for the national title. That's really unfortunate. However, if you know, the most important thing, though, for all the athletic departments is to actually play. They need that revenue. We saw it with Iowa and Minnesota losing sports. And the other teams are going to, you know, the other schools are going to have similar consequences without playing football. So if it's January, it's not going to be what they want, but it has to happen. And if it's a JV environment where a lot of players opt out, so be it. I mean, those players will be gone next fall anyway. But I do think that right now the target is October, and I think the teams that want to play, I kind of think is that they're going to be allowed to play. I think there's just too much pressure. And I think the new testing really allows for that that type of environment to take place.
I thought, Doc, did you see over the weekend that the Michigan Chancellor President was firmly in the camp of, no, this isn't going to happen? Apparently he's had a change of heart. Did you see that, Doc? And I guess that this is a guy that a lot of people, a lot of the presidents were really taking his opinion that this isn't a good idea. But since he's come around, it seems like Michigan would be in, yet I'm hearing that, you know, according to Patrick, that both Michigan schools were going to be out. What have you heard about the Michigan chancellor?
Yeah, I don't know enough about what his position is, other than, you know, at first he was very pro-postpone. I don't know about his changes all that much. But, you know, I would caution people to take anything away from what Dan has said. Dan has been wrong.
Yep.
Significantly wrong several times, along with Sir Pontoon Boat and a few other people, that they've been wrong. They've been, every day it's been a new guess, and every day it's been wrong, and then it comes back. And there's been four or five people that you can consistently understand. You know, Adam Rittenberg, Nicole Auerbach, Bruce Feldman, Pete Tamel, Teddy Greenstein. Mm-hmm. Would they write something? Those are the people to pay attention to, because right, they do have a pipeline to the office. The other people are hearing things. I'm hearing things. I'm having people at different schools tell me things. But I also know that it's more perspective than it is actual, you know, accurate information. So I would caution away from what Dan Patrick says, and I would steer more towards the five or six people I already named.
Doc, in the interim, before we get Big Ten football back, yeah, I'm saying that, you are on the Iowa State beat. You were there at Jack Trice on Saturday. So take us in. It was easy in, easy out, a little bit different than it was a year ago when you made your way to Jack Trice for the Cy-Hawk game. But what you saw out of the Cyclones in the 17-point loss to a Sun Belt team?
Yeah, it was a tough beginning, no doubt about it, for the Cyclones. I thought defensively they played really well.
Yeah, me too.
I did. I mean, other than that last drive and that one big play, I thought they played fine. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be a good defensive team. And I liked, you know, what I saw a little bit out of Breece Hall. I thought he played well. Mm-hmm. And not having Charlie Kohler and having, you know, Trevor Downing go down with an injury for halftime was crucial, because they're really young up front. You could tell that they, you know, they missed the blocks that normally they wouldn't miss. And that's happened in the first game of the year against anybody. But, you know, I was probably most concerned for Iowa State for the wide receivers. We're not used to seeing Iowa State struggle that position group, not in recent years with Hakeem Butler and Alan Lazard, and, you know, going way back to Todd Blythe and those guys. Mm-hmm. So I think they're very young, and you know, I think they would rely normally on their tight end crew, and not having Charlie Kohler was really, a detriment to them. But to me, I think the area that probably makes Matt Campbell nauseous was just the lack of fundamentals when it came to special teams. I mean, Iowa State and Iowa are similar in that way. They need to win those games in the margins and, you know, make sure that, you know, they don't allow anything more than a 10-yard return on a punt and a 25-yard return on a kickoff. And to give up both, I think, was that's something that will cause some sleepless nights. I think they've got the guts of a pretty good team. But I do think that they've got a lot of work to do.
Need more out of their quarterback, Brock Purdy, whose last three games have not been good. Back to last year, this one was this one wasn't good. And Doc, Matt Campbell quitting on the football team, not taking timeouts. Yeah, it would have been tough to come back, but you know what? We've seen it before. It's a 60-minute game, for crying out loud. And waving the white flag, and good for the Raging Cajuns, punching in another one. They wanted to score again, despite the fact that, you know, Matt Campbell wanted the game to be over. I was shocked that he didn't use the timeout.
I didn't really fault him as much there, but I will say that, you know, Brock Purdy struggled, and I would say his receivers didn't help him. I mean, there were some critical drops in the first half, and that, you know, especially on back-to-back plays on second and third down, that would have converted into first downs, and that adds to drives, that helps the quarterback's confidence, helps the offense's confidence, and I think that was as instrumental in anything as the way things went through the course of the day. And yeah, you can question a little bit of the strategy there, but I don't know, as being one of the 800 people or so in the stadium, I kind of thought at that point that Iowa State was cooked a little bit. And so maybe he was trying to, you know, they were down a couple of scores at that point, so you know, what you're trying to do is stop them and maybe have some timeouts, and you know, if you can score quickly and get another stop, then you can start using your timeouts. But when you're down multiple scores, it's hard to really it's hard to find a path forward without having timeout.
We'll agree to disagree on that one. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Doc, appreciate what you do. Stay on top of this. Just the last thing, vote today, tomorrow. Do you, if you had to pick one or C, none of the above, where are you as far as the Big Ten voting whether to go forward or not? Today, tomorrow, or none of the above?
I think probably today. I think it'll happen today. I think they'll move forward today. And I think we'll, you know, I'm really interested in knowing how many teams proceed, because I think that's going to be the fascinating discussion later today.
Good stuff, Scott Dockerman. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic, as we get a recap from Doc. I'll take a time out. We'll get into the NFL coming up next. We're here until noon. Dave Sproul will be listening to Matt Campbell's teleconference at 10 minutes after the 11. He'll jump on with us after that as we take you until noon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and 106IA.org. Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM. Let's get into the NFL, shall we? Todd Haslip covers it for the Sporting News. Crazy week number one. Still two games to go, 28 of the 32. Oh, I hit the wrong button, Trent.
Oh, we'll get Tad back on, though. Yeah, just a moment.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Yeah, Tad Haslip coming up momentarily. Boy, oh boy, my mistake. Anyway, speaking of mistakes, how about Jamie Collins' mistake from yesterday? Getting tossed out of the game. It was after a David Montgomery run, and I don't know why Collins was disappointed the way Montgomery puts his head down, but he put his, Collins, in trying to show the white hat what was just done to him, decided to make contact with you. You can't do that. And off he was, 15 yards, and he's kicked out of the game. That was crazy. Tad, my mistake. I appreciate you coming on, Tad Haslip. Good to speak with you. How are you?
No problem. How are y'all doing this morning?
Good. We're just talking about Jamie Collins. I mean, I guess we've probably seen that, maybe. You know, but he was trying to make a point, but then just obviously went too far. That was a bizarre one.
It was extremely bizarre. And, I mean, look, by the letter of the law, you're not supposed to make contact with an official. So, obviously, you know, there had to be at least a penalty here and I guess, objection with that. But, I mean, come on. Like, that's a pretty weak ejection. And I thought it was really funny that the official sold it like he was flopped, like a halfway flop. Like, what are you doing, dude? I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. First of all, like, if you're Jamie Collins, you have to know, look, I mean, you can, you know, try to prove that, you know, you're being hit with the crown of a helmet. You can do that without actually hitting the ref. So, yeah, like, obviously he's at fault here, but it's still a silly ejection. I mean, it's a really it's a dumb way to get kicked out of a football game. I tweeted when I saw it, you know, that he didn't get his money's worth. If you're going to get kicked out, do something worth getting kicked out for. But that was a pretty ridiculous one.
So we see Mitchell Trubisky in a fourth quarter comeback, down 20, make 21 points in the fourth quarter, three touchdown drives. Are you buying anything, any takeaway here, or it was the Lions? The Lions are bound to find a way, a stupid way to lose a game.
That right there, that's what I'm buying. The Lions are still the Lions. That was my takeaway, and I know that's a lazy takeaway. But look, guys, like, Mitchell Trubisky or not, whoever's a quarterback, like, the Lions, I mean, fair enough, they have a history of doing this, and it's continued under Matt Patricia. And look, I know that, you know, that if they don't get a drop in the end zone, they probably win that game. But they did. They dropped it. It was, and look, like, all credit in the world to Matthew Stafford. I mean, that was a great last-second drive that he engineered, and granted, it didn't work out. So really, you know, they complete that pass. We're having a very different conversation right now. So that's why I'm not necessarily buying into the Mitchell Trubisky stuff. I feel like at this point we already have a pretty good idea of who Mitchell Trubisky is as a quarterback. I do think the Nick Foles competition helped him, obviously. I mean, that was evident in that comeback. But still, you know, it's not like the Bears are going to want to pay this guy like what Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes are getting. So, look, I'm willing to change my mind on that if he has a big year. I just don't see it happening, and I see this more of, you know, the Lions blew it than anything else.
Let's talk about the Vikings and the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, got to give Gutekunst credit and maybe lit a fire under his veteran quarterback, because Aaron Rodgers looked like Aaron Rodgers. But the Vikings, from their perspective, I just don't know what to make of this team. I really don't. Kirk Cousins, he is what he is. Right. Dalvin Cook couldn't get going. Thielen was Thielen, but they need more help at the receiver position. Jefferson's a rookie. It's going to take him a while to make an impact. Where are you on this Vikings team after what you saw yesterday, a Packers team that put up 43 on them?
Yeah, look, I can totally understand why people are down on the Vikings this morning. I mean, when you put up that many points, I believe I saw it was the most given up by Mike Zimmer in his complete tenure. Obviously, that's alarming. But to be honest, I didn't necessarily leave that game thinking much differently of the Vikings. We have to remember something. Now, the Packers, you know, a lot of people didn't like what they did over the offseason. They didn't necessarily like the team-building measures that they took, the draft picks they made, the signings they made in free agency. And that kind of left kind of a negative aura, if you will, about the Packers throughout the offseason. But a lot of people forget this team made the NFC Championship game last year. This is a really good team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, take your pick, Vikings or Packers. Everyone was picking one of those two teams to win the division. So, look, the Vikings struggled defensively in week one. You know, they'll get healthier. They'll be able to make some adjustments. And I think for the most part they'll be fine. I just think a lot of people aren't giving the Packers enough credit for how on point they were in week one. And you mentioned the Aaron Rodgers factor. Like, of course he's motivated. This is probably definitely the most motivated he's ever been in his entire career. So, you know, you get that confluence of factors, and that's just kind of what happened in week one. And look, the Vikings got to shake it off quickly. I mean, they got to move on from this. They got to beat the Colts on the road. The Colts are hungry too. That's another team that got upset, and they're angry about it too. So give the Vikings a chance to bounce back, I think, would be my reaction here. And look, if we talk again another week and the Vikings are 0-2, then all of a sudden we might have a problem. But the way I see this, the Vikings lost to a really good team on Sunday.
We overreact every Monday, but maybe another level in week one. Who has the better season? Cam Newton's New England Patriots or Tampa Tom and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Who do you got this year?
Yeah, I feel like if you'd have asked me this through like 10 different points through the offseason, I would have given you a different answer each time. And I feel like that's probably going to keep up during the season. The Bucs have some issues to work out, obviously. Tom Brady himself has some issues to work out. And look, I mean, you know, the Patriots beat the Dolphins. I'm not going to give them a ton of credit there. They weren't necessarily great on offense. They were efficient, which is what they wanted to be with or without Cam Newton. So the way I see this is that the Patriots are kind of doing what they were going to do anyway, which is kind of keeping the ball on the ground for the most part. They're just doing it with the quarterback more than they otherwise would have. So Josh McDaniels and company, they're kind of trying to adjust on the fly there. But, you know, the schedule allowed for a win in week one, essentially. And look, the Bucs had to play the Saints, you know? I mean, that's a tough matchup for any team, especially, I wasn't going to say on the road, although the crowd wasn't a factor in the Superdome this time. But that's still a really good team that the Bucs had to play. So I kind of feel similarly about the Bucs as I said about the Vikings. Like, they just lost to a really good team. So, you know, as of right now, like, look, the Patriots are going to do what they do. We all know that they're going to be strong defensively. They're going to try to run the ball, and they're going to try to avoid turning the ball over. The Bucs are kind of going to be that way too, but they also have Tom Brady, who's going to let it loose a little bit in that Bruce Arians offense. And I think there's a little bit more room there for up and down games, if you will, whereas the Patriots, I think, will be more consistent throughout the season. So, you know, it's, a lot of it's going to depend on the schedule. A lot of it's going to depend on health. I think it's a tight race, honestly, between those two teams on who's going to end up with a better season. I just think you're more likely to get the consistency out of the Patriots than you are with the Buccaneers. So for that reason, I would say Cam Newton with the Patriots. But again, ask me again in 2 or 3 weeks, and maybe I'll feel differently about Tampa Bay.
Tad Haslip from the Sporting News is our guest. Trent and I both thought that the NFC West prior to the season might be the most competitive division in football. It was certainly entertaining yesterday. Russell Wilson, unbelievable. Matt Ryan threw for a ton of yards, but he had to in the football game. Arizona knocking off San Francisco in San Francisco. And then the Rams picking off the Cowboys last night. I thought the Cowboys had potential to be a Super Bowl team. I know it's only week one. Their defense looked, you know, as bad as it has been, with the exception of Aldon Smith, who was great. But where are you on the West? What did you see? Seattle, open your eyes. Arizona, either of those two teams more so?
Seattle did, absolutely. I mean, what they did to the Falcons was extremely impressive. And Russell Wilson specifically, like, I'm not going to pretend to be surprised by Russell Wilson having a big game, but for him to come out firing like that, going 31 of 35, 300-some-odd yards, I think I saw that, you know, with 35 pass attempts being the minimum, I think, like, only two or three players had ever done what he did completion percentage-wise. Again, though, that's not a surprise because it's Russell Wilson. And look, you add Jamal Adams to a defense like that. And I think based on what happened outside of the division with Arizona being San Francisco, I think the one takeaway you have here, and you can't take away much from week one, we all know that, but if Seattle's going to play like that, then Seattle's your division favorite. Yeah. Like that's pretty obvious. But look, I mean, what we kind of thought about Arizona is true. This is a team on the rise. And something you got to remember about, you know, Kyler Murray, and I'm not going to say he's like the MVP favorite at this point, but, you know, think about the last two NFL MVPs, Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Well, those are quarterbacks who are playing in their second season, and they rose straight to MVP level. And look, I'm not saying that Kyler Murray is going to do that, but he has an opportunity in front of him. And the way he played against San Francisco in that game, particularly in the second half, tells me that he could have a big year. And of course, you know, the defense is solid. So you mentioned that division being the most competitive in the NFL. I totally agree. And like, if the Cardinals are going to be like that all season, there's no bad team right in this division. Like, a lot of times you have like a bottom feeder or two. All of these teams are good and competitive. It's really impressive. And you can include the Rams in there because a lot of people were on the fence about what the Rams would be. Mm-hmm. And to go out there and play the way they played against the Cowboys, sure, the Cowboys had some shaky moments, but at the same time, that offense was on schedule. The offensive line was playing great. So, and therefore, when the offensive line is playing great, we know with that Sean McVay offense, that means the play action game is going to be working. And that's how that offense rolls. You saw it a couple of years ago when they ended up in the Super Bowl. It seems like that might be back. So this division is absolutely the most competitive. It's the most interesting. I do think Seattle's the favorite at this point. But, you know, every team is strong, so anything can happen.
Most likely winner tonight, Pittsburgh, Giants, Tennessee, Denver. Give me one winner.
Pittsburgh.
Over the
I'll
Giants.
Give you Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh, it's weird to call the Steelers a sleeper team because it's the Steelers. I just think that so many people underestimated how good that defense was last year, basically carrying the team when they have their quarterback injury issues, and B, the impact that Ben Roethlisberger will make, assuming he's healthy now that he's back. I mean, that offense was so awful last year because they were struggling so bad at quarterback. If you simply replace that one position, all of a sudden, this is a division title contender again. And look, I'm not by any means guaranteeing a Pittsburgh win here because it's a weird, you know, early Monday Night Football window and it's a road game for whatever that's worth in 2020. I just think that this is a team that people aren't necessarily expecting to compete in the AFC. And I think not only, you know, in the division, but I think that this team could be an AFC title contender.
Tad Haslip from the Sporting News. Tad, thank you. Appreciate you coming on. Look forward to doing it again. Thank you, Tad. Enjoy Monday Night Football. Appreciate it.
Of course, guys. Thank you, as always.
Good to talk to you. Tad Haslip from the Sporting News. All right, back to the college game. Bama, Bob, Trent, and I'll go around college football. Dave Sproul is going to be a part, listening in to Matt Campbell's teleconference, and he'll join us right after at about 11:25. We've got an hour to go. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.